Good evening, everyone. This is Steve Santafiro, your state senator here in the 10th District in Bucks County. Thank you for joining us this evening on this live telephone town hall. Tonight, as students and teachers are heading back to the classroom across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we are going to be discussing a timely issue. That is a proposed ban on the use of cell phones in our schools. Specifically, Senate Bill 1014, the Cell Phone Free School Act, along with its House counterpart, to address this issue and provide an environment in which kids can learn without the deception of phones. This is something that many other states are now beginning to implement. So Pennsylvania is not unique in this regard, but it is an important issue, particularly with the prevalence of phones now and the emergence of AI and the issues, of course, that that raises as well. So tonight I'm joined by three other panelists who are going to be part of our conversation, as well as you who are listening from home. And before I introduce the panelists, I just want to remind everybody that if you want to be connected directly to the conversation this evening in order to ask a question, all you have to do is press *3 on your phone. That's *3 on your phone. We are going to try to get to all the questions that you have this evening, but because we only have 1 hour, invariably there may be some folks whose questions we do not get to in the course of the call. If that is the case, you need to stay on the line, and at the end you'll have an opportunity to record a question, and then we will get back to you in the coming days with answers to your questions in that regard as well. We also have some questions that we've received before tonight's call, and we will be trying to address as many of those as possible over the course of the next hour as well. So as I said, I'm joined this evening by three panelists, and I'm going to introduce them now. First is Kirsten McGowan. Kirsten is a Central Bucks School District parent and a member of the organization known as TA Unplugged. We're also joined by Judy Finn, who is the president of the New Hope Solbury School District and a member of the Legislative Committee for the Pennsylvania School Boards Association. And finally, we're joined by Marcia DeSalvo, who is the principal of Mariana Bracetti Academy in Philadelphia. So we're going to get a perspective from a school board president, a principal and former teacher, and a parent who is concerned about this issue, as well as, of course, my perspective as a legislator trying to get this bill passed. Again, if you have any questions during the course of this hour, press *3 on your phone. As we're waiting for more folks to join tonight, I want to just go through the broader issue and why I believe this is important. Let's start with why we think we should move forward with this. A statewide phone-free school policy is backed by a strong bipartisan coalition of educators, parents, and even students across Pennsylvania who are deeply concerned about the impact of smartphones on academic performance, mental health, and social development. I should note, when I talk about bipartisan support, the bill, House Bill, Senate Bill 1014, passed the Senate by a vote of 46-1. So it has indeed broad bipartisan support. And in fact, I have worked with Republican senator from Allegheny County, a Democratic senator in Philadelphia, drafting this bill. And so this has been a real bipartisan effort. Beyond that, we know that excessive screen time and constant notifications are contributing to the increased anxiety, depression, and cyberbullying, while also taking away valuable in-person interaction and learning. Since the early 2010s, teen depression has surged by approximately 150%, while suicide rates among children ages 10 to 14 have tripled between 2007 and 2021, corresponding with the rising popularity of smartphones and social media. By creating a phone-free school environment, we are hopeful that we'll be giving students the opportunity to better engage in the classroom, build stronger relationships with their peers and teachers, and develop healthier habits. As I said, we're joined this evening by three panelists, and I'm going to turn to them now. And I'm going to start with Kirsten. Kirsten, if you would tell the folks who are on the line what you're hearing from parents as part of your advocacy on this issue, and why you, as a parent, think this is an important step for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to take.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me tonight. I think in the few short years, I know that, you know, we've been having this conversation in the Central Bucks area, parents have come a long way. I think it started with just a lot of questions of, well, how will I get in touch with my kid and how will that work? And increasingly, my more recent conversations with parents and the community is, it's about time. I think, you know, the cat is out of the bag on all the research, Senator, that you just outlined kind of the highlights of. But I think parents are increasingly aware of the negative education impact, mental health, connectedness to their teachers and their classmates. And so I think more and more parents are saying, yes, like they've already got Chromebooks in front of them. They've got a lot of work to do, a lot of executive functioning skills to develop. And so, give them a break from their, you know, what has become for many young people an appendage of their smartphone, to kind of put aside the texting and the social media updates and the gaming to really be present and focused during the school day. And for many kids, what we're hearing, and you even mentioned in your opening remarks, is more and more students and kids are opting for this because they see the pull of the device away from the things they know they should be focused on. And for those are the same reasons I got involved in this whole movement, and continue to be an advocate both through TA Unplugged and here in Central Bucks School District, is I struggled with some of the, you know, early tech I gave my own kids. I've got a rising middle schooler and an elementary student, and I realized we were missing out on some of the face-to-face and the push and pull of access to an iPad. We made some different choices at home, but just knowing how much the school environment is already kind of techified, they don't need multiple, ways to be doing that, and I want them focused in school. And so I think it's just a really important time to make the shift and the change, and quite frankly, Pennsylvania is woefully behind other states and communities on this front. So excited to hear from our other guests today about what we're seeing in terms of positive results from schools that have made this shift. And hope other parents will be open-minded about, you know, this is not about taking away. It's about unlocking the greatness of what the kids can experience at school.
Hi, thank you for joining this call with Senator Santospiro. Please just stay on the line and we will be continuing shortly. If you have a question, please press *3.
Great, Judy, can you give us your experience in the New Hope Tilbury School District over the last several years, as the district has moved to a stricter policy of banning cell phone use?
Sure. So I've been on the board for 6 years now. Our initial cell phone policy was initiated in 2009. It was revised in 2021 to the form where it is today. And it's essentially a ban. Cell phones are prohibited in our elementary schools, except for IEPs, principal permissions, field trips, as necessary, but they are essentially banned from our elementary schools. Middle school and high school is similar. They're allowed to actually have phones, but they need to be turned off in the lockers before first period until after last period. They can be used in classrooms, again, with permissions, social media, vetting, you know, quote, fake news, photography classes, STEAM and STEM. We have, in addition to the cell phone policy, initiated a lot of other mindfulness, cognitive wellness programs at New Hope. We don't have a if-then set of data, but over the last few years, our PACE survey, which you had alluded to earlier, talking about teen depression and suicide, our PACE survey has improved dramatically as far as suicidal ideation, drug use, depression, loneliness. Our AP scores, our school rankings, anecdotally, our staff have reported greater engagement with the students, more focus and attention, less referrals for behavior, especially in middle school. Anybody who's got a middle schooler knows that's a feat. The students also in their individual surveys have reported feeling more connected to their peers and more connected to what they're learning. In addition to my hat as a school board member and president for the last few years and my contributions to the Legislative Advisory Committee for the Pennsylvania School Boards Association, my real career was an emergency department nurse. So seeing these numbers since COVID that have spiked, and we all know what a huge godsend technology was during COVID to keep our kids in classroom, on Zoom at least, to keep them connected. To see the spikes in the numbers, it's incredibly disheartening, but also seeing our PACE surveys improve, it makes quite a bit of, it's profound. I do know other districts have initiated their cell phone policies, and this is through this Legislative Advisory Committee. I get to speak with 15 to 20 board members from across Pennsylvania to advise on policy and lobbying and legislation, that kind of thing. Increased numbers of books being taken on libraries, increased sports and free time activities. We have lunch and learns at New Hope Solbury where instead of hanging around on your phones next to your friends, you're actually in an environment where you're doing something a little more stimulating. Somebody comes in from the outside and talks to you for half an hour about a cool piece of machinery, a cool piece of technology, a career advancement procedure. So most of what we have is this anecdotal information, but the really telling thing for me is over the last few years seeing this decrease in reported behavioral issues.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you for giving us that perspective, Judy, and the real world experience you have so far in New Hope Solbury. All right. It sounds like we have Steve back on the line now. We apologize for the connection issue earlier. Steve, go ahead.
Yes, I was just curious as to if this legislation passes, how long would it take to be enacted? I have a sophomore, he's starting his junior year here, and I'd hate for it to be enacted after he's done.
Yeah, understood, you know? Steve. Thank you very much. Yeah, I hear you. Thank you very much for that question. So under the terms of the legislation, it would take effect in the 2027-2028 school year. That's the first year. And the reason we chose to delay it until then was because we wanted to give school districts enough time to prepare for this. You know, the way this would work is under the bill, the general policy would be a ban on use from bell to bell, which means from the time that kids arrive in the morning to the time that the school day ends. How exactly that gets implemented by the school districts, you know, Judy just described New Hope Solbury having the kids put the phones in their lockers. That would be up to the school districts at the end of the day. So we wanted to give the districts enough time to be able to work those things out, and we thought that was a reasonable compromise for doing that. So I hope that your child still has the ability to get the benefits of this, but that would be what would happen if we get the bill passed into the governor's desk. Thank you very much, Steve. Remember star 3 on your phone, star 3 on your phone to be connected directly tonight to ask a question. Next, we have Ed from Levittown. Ed, go ahead.
Hi, how's it going? Yes, first I'd like to say that I am absolutely for this, but I do have a question about, hey, look, the uptick in school shootings and emergencies, they have increased, so I think there has to be a safeguard. And, you know, what I'm thinking is possibly just have a phone in the room, in the classroom, to where they can contact police, emergency services, and in the extreme case of a parent needing to get in touch with the kid, they can call the principal's office and be patched into that class, and they can receive that call. And that way, basically, everybody wins. There would be a cost involved in this, but honestly, the cost that would be involved in that, that would make our kids safer, I don't think that matters.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, Ed, and your points are well taken. I'm going to turn to our panelists in a moment, but before I do, let me just answer some of what your question raises. First of all, if this were to go into effect, teachers would still have their phones. So in terms of being able to communicate in the classroom, there would not be any impediment to that. And beyond that, schools still have the ability through landlines to contact parents in cases of emergencies where information needs to be disseminated. I will just share with you an anecdote from my own career as a former teacher at the Ben Salem High School. This was admittedly about 24 years ago now, but we had a situation where there was an active shooter outside the school. There was a bank robbery, it was a robbery near the school. And out of an overabundance of caution, the district decided to lock the school down. Now, these perpetrators never got into the school. We didn't know that at the time. And as a teacher, I was trained to lock the door, turn off the lights of the classroom, and have all the kids go to a corner of the class away from the door. And I did that. Now, they didn't have smartphones back then, but the kids had flip phones, and they were able to text. And immediately they started texting their friends, they started texting their parents, and before you knew it, there was a rumor going around that there were people walking around the school building, inside the building, with guns drawn, posing a direct and immediate threat to everyone. That was not the case, and it created a level of hysteria that was not helpful to both the personnel of the school and also the first responders to securing the school and providing for everyone's safety. So I think, you know, often people will say, well, you know, if you take cell phones out of the schools in these emergency situations, it's going to make it less safe for students and staff. And I think actually the opposite is true, because I think what it often leads to is misinformation, which makes it harder for first responders to do their job. But I'm happy to get the perspective of some of our panelists on this. Marsha, we haven't heard from you yet, as both a principal and I believe a former teacher. What's your take on that?
Yeah, hi everybody. Thanks for having me. We had a similar situation happen when we first implemented. We use a device called Yonder, which is pretty popular. We were one of the first schools in the Philadelphia network to join, you know, kind of the march of taking phones out of our classrooms. And really our school, we are, you know, similar to a drug-free zone. Our school is a cell phone-free zone. But to Steve, your point, yes, teachers, you know, most teachers have a cell phone on them during the day, but also it's pretty standard that teachers have an office line in their cell phone, in their classroom, so that they can call out should they need to. So our first year of implementing Yonder, it was our third day of school, and kind of similar, we had a event that happened. Our school is located on an area in Torresdale, which is a pretty, one of the busiest streets in Philadelphia, Torresdale Avenue. And I would say right around the corner from our campus is a Dunkin' Donuts that's frequented from people coming off the L stop and buses, as well as just local traffic in the neighborhood. And there was somebody who had robbed a McDonald's. They had pulled out a weapon. And it was actually the first time that our school, at least since I had been there for 15 years, had ever gone on a lockdown. And, again, it's the third day of school. So, you know, that obviously heightens emotions. And when the police arrived, you know, there was no threat, immediate threat to our campus. But we did have some staff members who were in there getting a coffee, and, you know, school was in session. But, you know, the perpetrators were not really on our campus at all. But we were instructed to go into lockdown mode, which we did. And when Philly police arrived, the first thing that they said to me was, you know, where is everybody? And I responded, everyone's in the classroom where they're supposed to be on lockdown. And they said, no, we need families outside. And I just sort of looked at them, you know, kind of wasn't putting it together at the moment. And what they said is, usually when a scene like this happens and they get called to it, not only are they trying to make sure the external area is safe, because not only did they put our school on lockdown, but they put some local businesses on lockdown as well. But then they're dealing with a crowd of people who go to the scene. Understandably so, they're trying to get access to their child in a school setting. And so now they have to also make sure that those people are safe. And it really thwarts their efforts and prevents them from doing their job. And so, you know, within 30 minutes, we were off lockdown. They had secured the area. They had found, you know, the people. They had been detained. And we were back to learning. And then I think on the flip side of that communication piece is we were able to explain to families right away, there's an external event happening in the area. We went on lockdown. We were able to get that out to them in a text message and an auto dialer. Within probably minutes. And then as soon as we were off, we were able to communicate that with them. And so it did reduce, you know, we believe it kept our school safer that day because we didn't have people driving through a crime scene. And so, you know, we've seen that in a variety, of capacities. That's, you know, probably the most severe one, but even the small, minute details of what social media can sometimes do with crowds and things like that. Our students don't have access to their phones during the day, and so those things don't really happen at our school, which, you know, we're really happy about. But I would say that in many ways it kept things much more calm, controlled, safer, and for students especially who were, you know, only a year and a half out from COVID and had pretty high social anxiety, a situation like that, you know, really could have wrecked, honestly, a kid's school experience, especially on the third day of school. We had some kids who had not been in-person schooling for, you know, a long time at that point. So it's good perspective to keep in mind, and I think it's a normal parent concern, but it's something that we really addressed head on and, you know, unfortunately had to deal with early on in our adoption of that policy, but it's something that's worked out for us in the long term.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that, Marcia. That's a very helpful perspective on this issue because, as I said before, this is a question that we have heard from the outset when we first embarked on putting this legislation together. It's one of those issues where when you hear it initially, you think, yeah, that could be a problem. But then when you think it through and then hear real life experiences, you realize that the opposite is actually true. This would be helpful in keeping the school safer under those circumstances. So let me turn now to our next caller. And again, it's star three to be connected. Michael from Newtown. Michael, you're live. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I just had a question. Since we've seen school districts implement this policy, why is state legislation required?
Well, because it's not, thank you for that question, Michael. It's not uniform across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So there are 500 school districts in Pennsylvania. There are many private schools. And at this point, they all have slightly different policies to the extent they have policies on this issue at all. And the aim of the legislation is to provide a uniform rule across the Commonwealth, because we think from a policy perspective, it's important. And as I said at the outset of the call this evening, many states are adopting this approach. And the ones that have done so already have found really some pretty astounding results of kids paying greater attention in class, kids being more likely to pick up a book and read, the social interaction among students. And I want to just say a word about that, too, because that often kind of gets glossed over. But the idea of a bell-to-bell youth band is that students don't use the phones at all during the school day unless they fall into one of the exceptions, and we can talk about those in a bit. And so even when they're outside the classroom, they're in lunch, they're in recess, they're not using the phones. And the reason that's important is because it requires them to now interact with one another. And that is really important in socialization and learning how to interact with other people. And that, too, is part of the education process every bit as much as the formal curriculum. So we think from a policy perspective, it's so important that every district across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania should have a uniform policy on this issue. Understanding, of course, that how exactly it gets implemented is up to each district on a case-by-case basis. And so, again, star 3 is how you connect to us this evening to ask a question directly. And we have Lee is on the line. Lee, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Senator, for your work. I'm calling from Perkins here in Pennridge School District. We have a group called Pennridge Unplugged, which is affiliated with PA Unplugged. So my question is, what is the current status of the negotiation in the legislative body? The biggest difference I saw was the inclusion of private schools in the House version. Is there a possibility that this bill might be reached compromise soon? And then secondly, I have a question for the New Hope representative. As you may be aware, the Bucks County Commissioners contributed $32,000. Three tech schools in every school district in Bucks County has an opportunity to get $2,000. Did New Hope apply for their Bucks County grant? And if so, what are you doing with the money? Thank you very much.
Okay, Lee, thank you very much. I'll turn to Judy in just a minute, but let me answer the first part of your question, which is the status of the negotiations to try to get a bill passed. So there are, in fact, two bills, Senate Bill 1014, which is a bill that I have worked on with Senator Devlin Robinson, the Republican member from Allegheny County, and Senator Vince Hughes, the Democratic member from Philadelphia and Montgomery counties. And then there is a House Bill 1814. Now, the Senate bill was passed out of the Senate and went to the House. And essentially what the House did in the late spring, early summer, was amend the Senate bill to the biggest change they made was to include private schools in the scope of the bill. So the bill would impact not just public schools, but private schools in Pennsylvania as well. The House also took the original House bill, which was a very different bill, and completely what we call gut and replaced it with essentially the Senate bill plus this addition of private schools in the scope of the bill. So now we have two bills that are exactly the same. The House bill was passed out of the House and awaits action in the Senate. The Senate bill is still sitting in the House. It did get out of the Education Committee in the Senate, so that bill technically is a little further along than the House bill because the House bill hasn't moved at all in the Senate. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day which bill gets to the governor's desk. What matters is the substance. And this issue of whether the policy should cover both public schools and private schools is one that we have to resolve. Ideally, it would be great if our policy in Pennsylvania would cover all schools, including private schools. That is something that we would like to see if we could get that done. So we're in the process right now of having those discussions. We do have legislative session days yet to come this fall. My hope is that we could reach an agreement on that issue and actually get a bill to the governor's desk before the last legislative session day in October. And the reason that's important is once we get past this legislative term, which ends on November 30th, the process has to start all over again. And so we would have to reintroduce legislation in January and then get it through both chambers in order to get to the governor's desk. That's obviously something we could do, and it's not unusual for legislation to take a couple of terms to actually pass and be signed into law. This, in fact, has been a very quick process for this bill, and I think that's largely because there's broad bipartisan support for it. But I would like to get it done this year and in this term so that it could be implemented, as we discussed earlier, in the beginning of next year's school year, in about a year from now. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully we'll be able to get that done. Stay tuned and we will keep you advised about that. And as we get to the end of the call, I'll share with you some ideas about how you can advocate for that if you are so inclined. Judy, let me turn it over to you to answer the second part of Lee's question, which has to do with the grant that Bucks County has made available to the 13 school districts in the county.
Sure. Hi, Lee. No, we did not apply for the $2,000 incentive. We had our policy in place 5 years ago, and we didn't. It didn't matter to us. The $2,000 wasn't as important to us as having the policy in place. We didn't bother to look to see if we'd be grandfathered in just to get the check. It didn't make any sense for us to backtrack like that. So, no, we did not apply for it because we already had it in place.
Great. Thank you for that, Judy. Again, *3 to be connected this evening to ask questions directly of me and our three panelists. I guess the another question we have been hearing a lot over the course of the last year or so has been what about the rights of parents who may not agree with this? And I guess I would ask both Judy and Marcia if you could kind of opine on that, since you are in kind of a Marcia in your case as a principal and Judy in your case as a school board member, what the reaction to local parents have been who may not be supportive of this idea.
I can go first. I don't think, to be honest with you, I think we've had a lot of support. I think, there are always going, you're not going to, please everybody, unfortunately. But I think the families that were not on board with it have come around, and it takes time, sort of like any other school policy that at times families don't agree with or not on board with. One thing that a strategy that worked for us that is time consuming and a bit taxing, but the cost benefit analysis for us was better and worth the time was, I sort of identified some of those families, whether it be there were, kids that I knew were really going to struggle with this because they were constantly facing infractions around tech misuse prior to us implementing the policies, and just families that I knew, for whatever reason, some of it may have been fear, some of it may have been, trauma, or maybe they had a student who was medically fragile and that, was an area of where they could keep in touch with them or whatever. We did meetings with those families. And for me, my high school at the time when we implemented was about 425 that year, which is a smaller high school. But I'm, the only admin on site for that academy. And I think I did 63 meetings with families. So it was, again, really time consuming, but it was a way for us to really personalize the approach of explaining the policy and the why. And it was, you know, kind of moving everybody over to what we believed was the right side is the right side, one at a time. And now we're a K-12 school, similar to how a suburban district would run. And so it's just, it's second nature. And I think for a lot of families, especially I can speak at the high school level, you know, sometimes I would talk to parents before, you know, during a parent meeting or whatever, and they'd say, like, you know, I don't know why so-and-so's texting me all day long. I'm at work. You know, I don't know why they're bothering me while I'm at work. And I think for families, you know, they feel like they have to respond to their child. I think we all live in a very, we feel we have to respond right away. And so it gave them, they knew that their student was at school and safe. And if it is an emergency or was an emergency, that student goes to the appropriate person in the building. They go, if it's in, you know, medical situation and they're not feeling well, they go to the nurse. If there's a situation, you know, around mental health or anxiety or anything like that, they see our school counseling team. We actually have two emotional and mental health counselors on site. If a student just needs to let a family member know that they're staying after school to get some office hour time with the teacher, they unpouch their phone at the end of the day and they call their parent and say, hey, I'm staying with Mrs. Salvo today for XYZ. We don't want them in classrooms, but we're not naive to realize that kids are going to need to communicate with their families. So I think you figure out the policies that work for your school and your community, but it's been fairly easy, I think, to say, to get people on board, because I think they see the benefits so quickly, especially around test scores. So our AP scores have jumped incredibly in the last 4 years, and the year before, we had the highest literature Keystone proficiency rate that we've ever seen. And so it's really hard to argue when you know your student is doing well in school too, and may not have been for some of our students who were freshmen and didn't have this policy before they started with us, or came from other schools where they didn't have a cell phone policy and then came to our school. It's a bit of a culture shock, but you know, once they get on board, the family can really see the learning progress. And it's pretty hard for a parent to not want that once they see their student thriving.
Great. Thank you, Marcia. I appreciate that. And again, *3 to be connected directly this evening to ask a question of the panel. Judy, let me ask it this way. Since you've had this policy in place now for a few years at New Hope Tilbury, how can a parent contact their child, and how can kids contact their parents if needed? Since that seems to be the primary concern we hear from those parents who are not as supportive of this idea.
Sure, and there's a couple layers to that. I echo what was said earlier about, you know, we live in a country where school shooting is a term. Parents, they feel that viscerally. I'm blessed to be the mother and stepmother of 7 kids. Yes, that was 7. It's terrifying sometimes you send them off to school, especially after an incident happens. Parents want to be able to speak with their child in case they need them. In case there's an emergency, they want to be there. And my response to that has been, hand your middle schooler their phone and a basket of laundry. Ask them to put their laundry away and see how much they pay attention to that task. A teacher in that situation needs their kids to have their eyes focused on them, not on a phone, texting mom, texting dad. It could be life-saving. And that's been the response to that part of the conversation. I grew up in private school. I did 12 years of Catholic school. And going to the office to make a phone call, didn't happen. New Hope Solberry has a pretty open door policy. We are lucky. We are a smaller school. We have a small student to teacher ratio, teacher to student ratio. I apologize. They can raise their hands and go to the office and make a phone call. you know, it happens. I've gotten phone calls from the office. It's very easy to call the schools, to leave a message, to send an email to the attendance office. Hey, make sure Jack knows that he's coming home on the bus today. Make sure he knows he has to get his soccer cleats in the office. So there is communication, and that is part of the give and take of this dynamic. You know, if we're going to ask parents to give up this contact that feels like it has to happen because it has been happening for so long, we're so used to that instant connection with our kids, we need to be flexible with that. So we don't have policy in place as far as letting kids make phone calls. They just do. They just have.
Oh, in other words, the way things used to work before there were smartphones.
Yeah, but I had to ask Sister Nancy to make a phone call, and I was never doing that.
Well, okay. Understood. You're talking to someone who had a year of Catholic school, so that was a long time ago. So, but yeah, I'm not trying to be flip, but the truth of the matter is that things worked just fine before we had this technology, and it was always possible for parents to contact students and vice versa, and I think that would be no different in a situation where the use of phones is banned from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. And I do think, you know, anecdotally and also based on the polling, that, you know, a large majority of parents understand that. Kirsten, you know, you're obviously very involved in the parent group, PA Unplugged, to support this policy. But outside of that, as a parent in the Central Bucks School District, what do you hear from other parents? Is it generally supportive of this idea?
Yeah, it is generally supportive. I mean, I think one of the earlier callers, you know, mentioned having a high schooler. I think one of the challenges is, you know, I think parents with elementary kids are absolutely, you know, from on a whole, been very supportive and actually constantly pushing and asking when is Central Bucks going to get on board and when are these, you know, these bills going to pass. So I think super supportive just because they've got kids that don't have access to some of these devices yet, and so they don't want to get down that path. I think the harder part is when you've got kids that have had access to phones, you know, late middle school, high school, and what does that mean for them? You know, and I think, you know, Marsha and Judy have made lots of, you know, amazing comments on just, you know, this is about bringing it kind of back to the way it was and giving them the opportunity to not kind of constantly be tethered to their phones while in school. And it will certainly be an adjustment. And, you know, I think there are some great strategies that Marsha shared around how to have those conversations with parents and students. But I'm finding, you know, I still have kids where I need a sitter, or, you know, a high school sitter once in a while. So we often will talk about this, you know, because one of the things I say when they come over is, hey, like, let's not be on social media with my kids while I'm out, you know, trying to have adult time. But, you know, they get it. They get the draw, and I think they are more aware of just what the negative consequences are. And so I think it's just a shift, and it's one that I think we've all been, you know, I think one of the questions earlier was, why hasn't this happened yet? And I think it's hard. You know, communities, there are parents that, you know, don't want their kids to lose access, but the most of us want, you know, the school environment to be, you know, phone free. And it's just changed. And it's going to, as Marsha said, yep, it might be a little bumpy in the beginning from her experience, but we're all going to figure it out. And our kids are resilient, and our kids deserve the best. You know, as a parent and as a taxpayer, I want them focused on what they're learning in school. And just a couple of stats I think that will kind of help illustrate, you know, for anyone who's not a current parent on the line and curious about the topic. But there was a JAMA study earlier this year, and it tracked actually smartphone use of kids in school. And it was quite a large study, but kids on average ages 13 to 18 are spending 70 minutes per school day on their personal devices. That is roughly 1/10 of the school day, and most of it is going to social media, not texting mom. The average teen is getting 237 pings and notifications on their phone per day, knowing they're spending a large portion of their day in school. That's a ton of distraction. And studies are showing that it takes anywhere from 8 to 23 minutes after a single interruption, like a ping on a phone, for students to be able to refocus. And so the amount of time on the phone plus the added time of just getting refocused, you know, the comments that I think Judy made on just, you know, the distractions, you know, these kids have got so much in front of them preventing them from getting to the real learning. And it should just be a no-brainer for us to put these away during the school day so kids can focus. But parents on the whole have been super supportive.
Great.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Let me just, we have another caller. Before I get to that caller, I just want to go through, because there were some questions in advance of the call this evening about the bill, and one of them is, well, are there any exceptions to this? I just want to run through quickly what those exceptions are, and we've touched on a couple of them already. One would be if a student needs a device because of a medical condition. Another has to do with whether a student has an IEP or an individualized education program that would require the device. There's an exception for a student who is an English learner and needs a translation app on a device that he could use it for that. There is a limited exception for teachers who use the device for the purposes of instructional time. There have to be a number of requirements met for that, which involve the principal signing off on the need and the appropriateness for it. And those could also that could also pertain to what was, I believe, mentioned earlier in the context of New Hope Soulbury, which is if there's a field trip, that type of thing as well. So there are some exceptions, and I think those taken in totality, you know, I think address the legitimate concerns about the implementation of a bell-to-bell ban. But let me turn now back to our callers, and again, it's *3 to be connected this evening. And on the line is Cindy from New Hope. Cindy, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think my question, and first of all, thanks for taking the question and including me in this conversation. But my question is, why would this be a law versus just a school policy based on need or guidance? Why is an actual law required, and what would happen if somebody broke the law? Like what does this mean for kids and for society to have a law?
Thank you for that, Cindy. I appreciate that. Once again, we start from the perspective that as policymakers, we think this is an important policy for all students across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. For the reasons I outlined at the beginning of the call this evening, that, you know, we're worried about attention spans. We're worried about socialization. We're worried about a rise in anxiety levels among students, which seems to correlate to the use of various social media apps. And the idea is that we provide this space for at least roughly 8 hours a day when our students are in school that they can focus on learning. And hopefully that will lead to better outcomes, as our panelists this evening have alluded to, where these bans have already been put into place. So, you know, we think it's important policy for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, just like we think it's important in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that we require students to go to school at all, right? We have certain requirements at the state level that every school district, and for that matter, private schools too, have to comply with in Pennsylvania. So this would just be another one of those. And so having it a law means that it would apply across the board. And as I said before, the main unresolved issue in trying to pass this legislation is whether the scope of it would include private schools as well as our 500 public school districts. So that's why, and we think a uniform policy across the Commonwealth makes the most sense. And right now, as I said earlier, you have kind of a patchwork of things. You have, on the one hand, districts that have no policy and kids can do whatever they want. On the other hand, you have districts like New Hope Solbury, which has had, essentially a bell-to-bell policy now for several years. And then you have somewhere in the middle, some of the schools in Central Bucks where it may not be bell-to-bell, but it's during instruction time. And so it kind of varies from place to place. And what we're saying is, as policymakers who think this is an important issue, we want to have a uniform policy across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which is why we think passing this bill and having it signed into law makes a lot of sense. So I hope that answers your question. So we have about 5 minutes left this evening, and I just want to remind everyone who's on the line that if they have a question they'd like to ask this evening, all they have to do is press *3 on their phones. What I'd like to do before I ask our panelists for their closing thoughts is just suggest to the listeners that if you are in agreement and think this would be good policy for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I encourage you to reach out to your legislators. Obviously, if you're in my district and I'm your state senator, you don't need to reach out to me, but you can reach out to your House members, and you can, importantly, reach out to the leaders of both the state Senate and the state House to encourage them to reach an agreement on this issue and get the bill passed this fall. For the reasons I said before, I think it's really important that we do that, that we get it to Governor Shapiro's desk. Those are the things you can do, and I really do believe it can have an important impact in these next 2 weeks in trying to get the bill to the governor's desk. It doesn't look like we have any further callers this evening, so I will now turn it to our panelists to kind of give us your closing thoughts, and I will start with Marcia.
Hi, thanks again. Thanks for having me. I'm hoping that our school experience can kind of help everyone see how this can work in practice. I think, for us in summary, it just really has changed the culture of our school. And so, when we came back, when I made the decision to implement that policy for our school, it was definitely a bit scary and risky because we were some of the first people in the space to do that. And my breaking point was seeing a student answer a FaceTime call in a classroom, and my head almost exploded. And I basically decided that if I wanted to retain teachers and I wanted to first and foremost preserve learning for our students and get them and close achievement gaps, that I had to get phones out of classrooms. And so there's a lot of data that we have just anecdotally in our building to support that, but I think some of the byproducts of the cultural pieces that I just couldn't have known and predicted, kids feel safer in their classrooms to ask questions. They feel safe in school. We didn't talk about this tonight at all, but kids were eating again in the cafeteria. They literally weren't eating because they either were just doom scrolling during that time period, or, you didn't want someone taking a picture of you or something like that. The conversation, the socialization, I know that PA Unplugged used our school story and showed us having, kids playing games, board games and things like that during lunch. It's just improved the culture of our school in ways that I don't think also can be measured. And so I would encourage you all to really think about what the many wonderful things that are going to come about by having this policy implemented.
Great. Thank you very much, Marcia. I appreciate your perspective this evening. Judy, can you give us your closing thoughts?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Senator. I really appreciate being part of this conversation. What seems to be in my legislative advisory committee role, the conversation is why should this be mandated? Like some of our callers have said, why should this be legislated? And in my head, I think that most people are coming from a place of doing the best as far as a board member for their school district, for the children in the district, for the taxpayers in the district. But moving forward, not every board will be coming looking at it through that lens. And I think about countries like Australia and Canada and the United Kingdom who have put social media bans in place related that it's illegal for children under 16 to have social media. Well, shouldn't the parents be taking care of that? But they're looking at this bigger picture, this you know, 10,000-foot view as opposed to this coned-down view of what does it mean in the future? Because right now, everybody understands, again, the analogy of giving your 14-year-old a basket of laundry and a cell phone. The laundry's not getting put away. We all know it. The phone is going to distract. It's going to keep them from doing a thing. They're going to start texting with their friends. We look at it from this 10,000-foot view of what is the best in long term. And sometimes we need legislation to help watch out for our kids. Nobody likes to be told what to do, but sometimes we need legislation to watch out for our children. So thanks again for having me today.
Great, Judy. I appreciate your thoughts tonight, and thank you. And last but not least, Kirsten, you give us your closing thoughts.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity to connect with everyone tonight. You know, I think the research is clear. There is growing support from parent communities. And those of you, you know, if you know anybody who still has questions, you know, please direct them to paunplugged.org. It is a grassroots effort of parents, caregivers, educators, healthcare professionals across just the state of Pennsylvania, so it is very localized. We've got tons of resources on there to help answer questions and data to support you in your kind of evolution, hopefully, in thinking about this issue. But, you know, I think the evidence is clear. This is the right thing for the kids. It's the right thing for our teachers. And it's the best use of our taxpayer dollars that we spend on education and making sure we've got a robust and booming, you know, pipeline of talent coming out of our great state. So please reach out to PA Unplugged. If you've got more questions, we're happy to help. And thanks for the opportunity to join you tonight.
Great. Thank you, Kirsten. And thank you all for participating this evening in our telephone town hall. If you did not get a chance to ask a question, you can remain on the line and you'll be able to leave your question on voicemail and we'll get back to you with that. If you have any further questions or concerns or a question occurs to you after our call tonight, you can always reach out to my office and the number here is 215-497-9490. Again, 215-497-9490. You can also visit my website at SenatorSteveSantaciro.com. Once again, this is Steve Santaciro thanking you for participating in our call this evening. And once more, if you're interested, please do get involved and speak out so that we can get this done and get it done sometime this fall. Have a good night.